Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors. Welcome to the Ultra Full Year 2020 Results webinar. I now hand over to Simon Price, CEO, and Jos Slater, CFO. Simon, over to you.
Thanks, Tamsin. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us today, and thank you for your continuing interest in Ultra. And welcome to this presentation of our 2020 full year results, which I think show excellent progress that we're making. And even though we're only a year into our transformation, that One Ultra is already delivering well for its stakeholders. The formal presentation will last between 40 and 45 minutes. And then, as Tamsin said, we'll follow it with a facilitated question and answer session, but we know you're all busy, so we'll try and finish no later than 10:40. A recording of this presentation and the subsequent Q&A session, together with an interview with Jos and me, will also be available on the group website later today. So, to 2020, when I think we really began to unlock the underlying strengths of Ultra. We made really good strategic progress with a number of key program and platform wins. It was a year of strong organic growth, and we exited the year with another record order book. We delivered a robust operational and financial performance, which, given that it was delivered in the midst of a global pandemic, represented excellent execution. Our Focus, Fix, Grow transformation program is on track and is already beginning to deliver for stakeholders. And I think our 2020 performance demonstrates the exciting potential of this group that we talked about last year, but where there's still so much more to come. And we enter 2021 very well positioned to continue this excellent delivery. Now let's look at this 2020 performance in a bit more detail and provide you with some colour on the progress that we're making. So to start, good strategic progress in the year. We're continuing to grow our pipeline of future business, winning exciting new positions on significant platforms based on our broader group capability. And I've highlighted a few of them here. At the end of 2020, we were awarded an IDIQ by the US Navy, which with options could be worth over $270 million to us, to develop the next generation NICSI electroacoustic towed torpedo countermeasure system for them. This is a new program for us. It replaces an existing system, which is currently deployed on around 200 US ships and another 200 ships in 20 navies around the world. We won it in a competitive tender process, and we replaced the incumbent with our deep and group-wide technical capability in the range of technologies that this system will need. Clearly, our maritime domain knowledge is important, and our existing anti-torpedo expendable capability was key, but our broader signal capture interpretation, as well as our transmission, signature management, and towed systems capabilities will all be important in delivering the best solution to the customer. In July, we were awarded a $150 million IDIQ to develop and supply the US Navy's amphibious tactical comms system. This is a high bandwidth data and video communication system between ships and units ashore. Again, we won the program in a competitive tender where our differentiated ability to deliver sustained, secure, high bandwidths in congested and constrained environments was key, but where our understanding of the unique challenges of signal transmission in the harsh shipboard maritime environments and how to facilitate interoperability will also be key. We received the first contract awards on our previously announced position on the Canadian Surface Combatant as the provider of variable depth and hull-mounted sonar. And this was based on our proven technical capability and delivery on the UK's Type 26 frigate, which is the reference vessel for this program. However, we've not been just selected as the sonar provider, but also as the preferred supplier of the entire underwater warfare suite, based on our wider expertise in torpedo defense, integrated surface ship, torpedo defense, and signature management, which means there's even greater potential on this program than the $500 million we originally reported. Finally, we continue to win interesting and strategically important development work. For example, in September, we were awarded our first Sonobuoy development contract outside the joint venture that we have with Spartan in Arabsko. This is a $24 million DIFAR, that's Extended Range Directional Frequency Analysis and Recording System for the U.S. Navy, which extends their capability to track increasingly sophisticated undersea adversaries and positions us well in our continued support of the U.S. and global navies in the anti-submarine warfare theater around the world. I think these key program wins are evidence of the potential that we see in OneUltra. Whilst they only had limited impact in 2020, they are all contributing to our growing pipeline of future business. 2020 was also a year in which we delivered strong growth. We benefited from good order intake on a number of important multi-year programs we've won over the last couple of years, and our order book was up nearly 6% again last year. In maritime, we grew organically by over 12% with good contributions from the Mark 54 torpedo, continuing strong demand for Sonobuoys from our Arabsko joint venture with Spartan, and subject to relevant approvals, we look forward to working with a new partner in Arabsko this year. Also our $42 million development and low rate initial production contract on NGSSR. In intelligence and comms, we grew by nearly 9%, benefiting from the first full year production on our next generation Orion orders under the U.S. Army's TRILOS program, and from both system sales and license fees on our world-leading ADCS C2 system. This growth was partly offset by an 8% decline in critical detection and control, which was primarily COVID driven, and Jos will provide you with a bit more detail on this in a couple of slides. We exited the year with a record order book at around $1.1 billion and strong order cover at around 71%, in line with last year, which provides us with good visibility into 2021. With that quick trot through, I'm going to hand over to Jos now, who'll take us through the group's operational and financial performance.
Thank you, Simon. This time last year, we talked to you about our plan to focus on our core capabilities, fix things through our transformation program, and grow through improved collaboration and investing in technology and our people. A year on, we've made great progress with strong growth across all of our key financial metrics and increasing momentum to our transformation program. COVID did make things difficult, despite that, we're a bit further ahead on the transformation than we anticipated. Altra proved its robustness in 2020 with resilient sales and excellent execution, given that COVID had some impact on demand, our customers, our supply chain, and our factory operations. The closing order book increased nearly 6% organically, with commercial aerospace being the only significant weak spot. The year-end order book has been supplemented by some major wins already this year. Revenue growth was strong, up 5.2% organically. Underlying operating profit of $126.1 million was 6.2% higher organically than 2019. Margins expanded 20 basis points to 14.7%. In 2020, we increased R&D investment by $2.8 million organically, strengthening our competitive position by investing into sonar technology, secure data links, leading-edge command and control software, communications pods, and our quantum extreme value statistical models. We increased investment in transformation by over $5 million year-on-year, expensing $8.2 million in 2020 across our projects. During the course of 2020, we built a strong infrastructure to support transformation, which gives us confidence that the investment will generate good future returns. The increased R&D and transformation costs were offset by less engineering overruns and some help from lower than expected travel and marketing costs as a result of COVID. These are expected to normalize somewhat during 2021. Underlying profit before tax increased by 8.7% to £114.5 million, and underlying EPS increased 9.3%. Underlying operating cash conversion for the year of 92% was excellent, particularly as we successfully worked with the U.K. and U.S. tax authorities to pay any tax due but not payable, where the payment date had been temporarily moved out as part of COVID-related stimulus packages. I'll talk more about cash later. Underlying EBITA ROIC increased to 20%, supported by our growing profit, lower debt, and acquired intangibles, and the low capital nature of this business. We do not need much capital to grow organically, and intangible assets such as know-how, software, statistical models, and algorithms are important to drive sales but tend not to sit on the balance sheet. Starting on the left-hand side of the revenue bridge, currency translation was a slight headwind due to strengthening GBP, and we continued our program of focusing Ultra through the sale of some non-core assets. Sales in maritime and intelligence and communications were up strongly, with supportive defense spending and Ultra continuing to comfortably outperform its markets. In the critical detection and control business unit, the picture was mixed, with solid demand for military aerospace and nuclear solutions, but weak demand for industrial sensors and from commercial aerospace as a result of COVID. Turning to the profit bridge, translational FX was a minor headwind. A 1 cent move in the US dollar impacts revenue by around £4.2 million and trading profit by around £0.6 million. Translational currency may well have more of an impact this year than last, but transactional FX is hedged for this year, with the US dollar to GBP rate that is largely unchanged compared to last year. As usual, the appendix contains a ready reckoner showing the impact of currency movements. The sale of our loss-making Ottawa-based electronic intelligence business at the start of last year slightly increased underlying operating profit. Organic profit growth was up strongly, increasing 6.2% to £126.1 million, with the growth in the two defense divisions partly offset by a decline in profit in critical detection and control. I'll now walk you through the strategic business units in more detail. Demand for our maritime products is excellent, with the order book growing over 40% organically and organic revenue increasing 12.3%. Simon's already talked about Mark 54, Sonovoids, and NGSSR. In addition, our naval systems business saw strong demand by the US Navy for hull-mounted sonar arrays, and our sonar systems business has good orders for torpedo defense systems from India, one of which was delivered at the end of 2020. Sales of signature management products were also good. Underlying operating profit increased 12.9% organically to £58.6 million, reflecting the increased sales. Margins expanded slightly to 15%, with the tailwind resulting from last year's £8.8 million of contract losses, offset by increased investment into R&D and transformation, as well as some supply chain and engineering disruption, which was largely the result of the pandemic. It's also fair to say that we do have more to do to improve quality and program management. Looking forward to 2021, we expect the strong order book to drive further year-on-year revenue growth in maritime. Order intake in our intelligence and communications division was also strong in 2020, increasing 9.4% organically. The communications business won important orders for radios from the US Army, Navy, Marines, and Special Forces. This will ensure interoperability between them and provides Ultra with a strong platform for the future. Our C2I business won important new business with the Jet Trainer solution for the US National Guard and MADIS Air Defense System for the US Marines. ADSEA, Air Defense Systems Integrator, continues to lead in the US and reached over 2,000 installations globally last year. Sales were up 8.6% organically, with strong sales of radios, ADSEA, and cybersecurity products. Underlying operating profit increased organically by 6.7% to £33.5 million, reflecting the increased sales. Margins declined slightly to just under 14%, with improved productivity in a number of businesses, offset by increased investment in transformation and R&D. In 2021, we expect to see further revenue growth in Intelligence and Communications, in large part due to demand for our radios and tactical command systems. In Critical Detection and Control, the order book decreased organically by a little over 9%. Orders for commercial aerospace parts fell by nearly 20% as a result of the pandemic. But orders in our forensics business were excellent, increasing 35% year-on-year, despite COVID restricting our ability to visit customers. We are increasingly confident in the ability of this business to grow. Revenue decreased organically by 7.9%. Demand in this division was particularly impacted by COVID, which affected sales of commercial aerospace parts, industrial sensors, and forensic solutions. But sales were resilient in relation to F-35 parts and support and maintenance for our large installed base of ballistic identification products. Profit declined organically by 4% to 34 million pounds, but we managed to increase the margin to 15%. This reflects good cost control across the division, some benefits in aerospace from favorable transactional FX, and good mix in our forensics business. Looking forward, we expect 2021 to be another difficult year for the aerospace market, with a full year impact of the COVID-related downturn in commercial aerospace. In addition, this year we will be investing to consolidate two of our Critical Detection and Control sites, and we intend to invest into our forensics business to drive further growth. In the walk from underlying PBT to statutory PBT, shown in the second column of this slide, the only material item is amortization. Amortization reduced sharply to 12.6 million in 2020 because intangible customer relationships and technology assets created by historical acquisitions had become fully amortized. This decrease contributed to a 14% increase in statutory PBT to 103.7 million. The most notable movement in the walk from EBITDA to underlying operating cash flow is the working capital inflow of 4.4 million pounds, with working capital turns increasing to 10.1x. This was driven by strong collection of receivables, a reduction in unbilled receivables by around 10 million pounds, and an increase in customer advances by around 7 million pounds. I have included an appendix which shows that the net of unbilled receivables and advances is now almost zero. The improvement in receivables and payables was partly offset by inventory increasing by around 14 million pounds. Inventory days increased slightly. This year, we are increasingly focused on reducing inventory relative to sales and have adjusted our annual bonus scheme in line with this initiative. We were efficient in our use of CapEx, with capital investment flat, notwithstanding investment into software to support our HR and project management processes. Overall, underlying operating cash conversion was 92%, demonstrating the high quality of our earnings. Free cash flow of 99.4 million was up 35 million pounds on the prior year, reflecting our excellent operating cash flow and lower interest and tax payments. Please note that we've amended our definition of free cash flow so that it now includes lease payments and have restated 2019 to be on the same basis. We feel that this definition is more helpful for both shareholders and analysts. Overall, net debt, including both pensions and lease liabilities, reduced 69 million pounds to 85.8 million. Net debt to EBITDA of a little over 1x. Net debt on a covenant basis decreased to 48 million pounds, with a leverage ratio of just 0.34x. The U.K. pension deficit on an IAS 19 basis reduced slightly to 70 million pounds, but the pension deficit on an actuarial basis reduced broadly in line with the agreed de-risking strategy from 68 million pounds to 60 million pounds, with good performance from the scheme assets. As a reminder, we have an agreed schedule of contributions in place, pursuant to which we have 47 million pounds left to pay, with the payments of 11 million pounds a year scheduled to end in March 2025. We will recommend to shareholders that the final dividend fee increased by 5.9%, taking the year-on-year increase to 5%. This is supported by our earnings and cash flow growth and is in line with our capital allocation policy. Looking forwards, we expect to see revenue continuing to grow well during 2021. We expect margins to reduce back towards 14%. This is because we plan to increase investment into transformation to between 11 and 13 million pounds, and we intend to increase R&D to between 3.8% and 4% of revenue as we further develop our exciting technology, which Simon's going to expand on shortly. We also expect travel and marketing costs to increase to more normal levels during 2021. We expect our strong return on invested capital to continue in 2021, notwithstanding the increased investment, and we expect cash conversion of between 75% and 85%. We expect to increase capital expenditure by around £15 million, mostly to support the expansion and improvement of our facilities to support expected future growth. Looking beyond 2021, the progress on transformation means that we now anticipate year-on-year benefits in 2022, a year ahead of plan. So in conclusion, during 2020, we continued to grow revenue and profit, but also expanding margins and investing into R&D and transformation. We strengthen our governance processes around program management, transformation and R&D, and are increasingly comfortable that our focus, fix, grow projects will deliver benefits for our stakeholders. Given our order book and the momentum behind transformation, we are optimistic about 2021 and beyond, despite COVID-related disruption.
Thanks, Jos. I think it's important to remember that these results were delivered not only in the midst of a global pandemic, but also at a time of significant internal change, as we are now firmly into the execution of our Focus, Fix, Grow transformation programme. The good progress that I reported last August continued in the second half, with virtually all work streams in transformation proceeding on or ahead of plan. And I'd like to highlight a few projects that are really already having an impact on what we do and how we do it. In support of our operating model, we've designed a new organization structure that was implemented at the beginning of this year, which completes our migration from an aggregation of individual site-based businesses to a collaborative focused group of three strategic business units made up of 11 operating business units. In procurement, we've appointed a full-time procurement lead with appropriate resources to standardize procurement processes and to coordinate key category management across the group. On operational and functional excellence, we're making good progress on process improvement, particularly in HR, where all our HR admin process was standardized last year and a common application, Workday, was chosen to run. Workday goes live across the whole group in April. On culture, we've promoted our best people into new roles and enhanced our capability and improved diversity. Just to give you an idea of the scale of the change that's gone on in 2020, by the end of the year, nearly 40% of Ultra's top talent is new in role, and over half of these are new to Ultra. One in three of them are female, and women now make up over 25% of Ultra's top management, which is really good progress over where we were 2 years ago. We're also seeing material improvement in our employee engagement score, which tells us that people are buying into what we're trying to do here and are getting on board. On technology enablement, new foundational IT infrastructure has been selected. It is currently being implemented globally, which supports our data standardization and process improvement initiatives and enables much more effective information exchange and collaborative working across the group. And finally, on site excellence, we have already started to optimize our footprint, closing one facility and beginning the closure of two more. And I think as these projects demonstrate, our change program is extensive, but being well managed and is already driving real change across Ultra. Focus, Fix, Grow isn't just about delivering numbers. It's about delivering sustainably for all our stakeholders. And I know there's a lot of focus on ESG at the moment, and this is true at Altria, but it's not as a response to investor sentiment. It's because it's core to our transformation and to everything that we're trying to do. The change we're driving across Altria is aligning the organization to deliver better long-term and sustainable value for all of our stakeholders. And our annual planning cycle focuses on actions to deliver against all of our stakeholder goals, not just for short-term financial outcomes. And our performance management and oversight processes monitor delivery against them in the same way as we monitor our financial outcomes. And I've included here a RAG chart, which just shows how we delivered for each of our non-shareholder stakeholders versus the objectives we set ourselves at the beginning of 2020. And as you can see, we've made just as positive progress here as we have on our numbers. But in good CEO fashion, rather than just celebrate great delivery, I'll comment on the couple of ambers where we didn't quite achieve what we'd hoped to achieve. Under employees, virtually all the roles in the new organization have been filled, but promoting up our best people has created a few more succession gaps than we'd ideally like to have. But I expect this to change as the teams gel and the leaders get to know their people. Under customers, we have developed a standard process for gaining independent customer feedback, but our rollout plan is marginally behind where we hoped it would be. And whilst we saw a material improvement on-time delivery, we didn't quite meet our stretching targets, although I have to confess this was partly COVID-driven. And on suppliers, we also didn't manage to aggregate our PCB buy as anticipated, but again, this was partly due to the disruption caused by the global pandemic. And I'd also like to flag here that these great stakeholder outcomes were really only delivered through the exceptional agility, commitment, and resilience of our outstanding people, who've not just had to deal with challenges at work, but also severe disruption and sometimes tragedy at home. Many of them have also committed their personal time and effort to provide immediate and much-needed help and support to their local communities that have been so badly impacted by this pandemic. They and the charities and the associations they're supporting are truly demonstrating Altria's agile values, and we were pleased to be able to partner with them through the creation of a One Altria fund, which we put in place in March, and we've made significant financial contributions in support of these local efforts, with just a few of them being shown on the right-hand side of this slide. I'd just like to say I'm actually almost more proud of these outcomes as I am of the group's strong strategic and financial progress in the year. It just demonstrates what this organization can deliver through our amazing people when we're aligned and focused. So I think for us, 2020 was a really strong year for Altria, and it demonstrated the exciting potential of this group that I talked about in our Capital Markets Day at the beginning of the year. And we enter 2021 in a really great place. We're well positioned in big, predictable, and stable markets. But what's actually going on in the Five Eyes defense spending world that drives most of what we do? Well, on the left-hand side of this chart, it's trying to describe the pivot that's going on in the West as we're moving from protecting against unknown threats and counterinsurgency to near-peer military and grey threats from technologically advanced, well-funded, and coordinated nation-state adversaries. And this is all taking place against the background of high geopolitical tension, but where there's also significant economic headwinds as a result of the fiscal and other responses to the pandemic. Now, the very different nature of these threats is driving a change in focus of where the Five Eyes nations are directing their dollars to areas like mission-enabled sensing, rapidly accelerating detect and deploy, doing more with less, and most importantly, countering asymmetric threats, that broad and unpredictable spectrum of military, paramilitary, and information operations that are targeted against weaknesses in governments, armed forces, and/or their key supporting infrastructure. And this is what the future thinkers of places like DARPA are referring to as mosaic defense. That's fast, scalable, adaptive, joint, multi-domain threat monitoring and response. And this needs continued catch-up investment and maintained spending commitment. So how do these conflicting drivers play out? Well, although it's pretty early in the life of the new administration, in the US, most commentators are predicting that the need to address the changing threat environment, combined with a number of years of underinvestment in key areas, that means despite the economic headwinds out there, research, development, test and evaluation, and procurement spend, and those are what's on this chart here, and those are the things that drives Ultra's defense businesses, will be broadly protected irrespective of any broader budgetary concerns and should remain at around current levels before returning to moderate growth over the medium term. The same commentators are forecasting moderate growth in the other Five Eyes defense budgets for similar reasons. And based on what we can see today, we tend to agree with those views and feel they're a good base planning case. In our other markets, as Jos said, we don't expect to see much recovery in commercial aerospace in 2021 and only slow recovery thereafter. But our other CDC markets continue to show modest growth. Well, what does it all mean for us? Well, when we do a more detailed analysis of US contracting data and we reflect the changing threat environment, our key maritime multi-mission and multi-domain intelligence and comms areas continue to show low to mid-single-digit growth annually for the next 5 years. And so we remain very well placed as a relatively agile player in these growing segments, notwithstanding the stable broader defense market. And as Jos has said, as a technology-led applications engineer, we generate our best returns from the internal technology investments that we make. Our CTO is increasingly overseeing and directing this investment, engaging with customers at a strategic level, and aligning our technology roadmaps to their needs to improve our horizon scanning, to spot disruption opportunity, and to coordinate technology developments across the group while ensuring that we generate good financial returns from the investments that we've made. So as you can see on this slide, the four areas of focus we believe are important for the defense community are already much better aligned to our own technology development plans. With the better visibility and closer collaboration that we have in our technology investments, we're also developing coordinated and core solutions that have multi-applications across a number of our SBUs and OBUs. And we're therefore continuing to increase this investment in 2021. And here are some of the examples that we're investing in to support that changing customer focus. We're doing a lot more in federated and multi-domain analytics, where we're enhancing our capabilities to transform multi- and cross-domain big and complex data into actionable information, and indeed have recently hired our first big data specialist. We're developing adaptive cognitive networking and situational awareness, where we're building distributed and real-time machine learning capabilities into mission-critical and ad hoc mesh networks. We're also very focused on next-generation anti-submarine warfare, where we are investing in support of the evolving threats from a much more capable undersea adversary, looking at unmanned delivery and monitoring systems, as well as increasingly sophisticated sensors with their own embedded analytics. And finally, we're developing systems enabling autonomous, persistent, and multi-domain operation through the building of a standard suite of core capabilities that support autonomous operations, from automated deployment systems through intelligent detection to discrimination. And importantly, all of this increased investment supports the enhanced future growth at Ultra, and our continued segment outperformance. In addition to segment growth in stable markets and technology investments that we're making to enhance our growth in those markets, our transformation is proceeding to plan, and it'll further accelerate our ability to grow and outperform. With the good progress that we've made in 2020, the buy-in that we're seeing, and our building change and improvement muscle, as Jos has said, we're confident enough to accelerate elements of this transformation program in 2021. We've set out in this chart some of the areas we'll be focusing on this year, and I'd like to highlight a couple. In operating model, it's clearly now about delivering the benefits from the new organization that became effective on the 1st of January this year. In procurement, 2021 is the year we anticipate starting to realize benefits from demand aggregation and from improved supplier collaboration. In operational and functional excellence, it's about embedding the global HR processes and realizing the benefits that the project was based on, as well as accelerating similar work in finance and embedding continuous improvement and standard continuous improvement tools across the organization. On culture, whilst we're very well-placed with a significant infusion of talent to support our already capable people, we still need to attract and retain talent in support of our continued growth in a competitive employment environment. In culture, it's about continuing to align and focus the organization to ensure we're just as effective in delivering on our 2021 employee, customer, supplier, and community goals as we were in 2020. We've got a much better process in place this year to align all of the organization behind the delivery of these goals and good improvement action monitoring processes. In technology, under our CTO, we've brought together internal resource and external partners to create Ultra Labs to align and support and occasionally lead some of our cross-OBU technology investments and growth accelerators that I've referred to in my last slide. Finally, we will be continuing our site optimization program to create greater agility and flexibility, and we'll be exiting three further facilities and expanding two in support of future growth in 2021. This all improves footprint utilization and ultimately efficiency, cost, and our impact on the environment. When we look at our transformation progress and the areas that we're going to be accelerating this year, we now anticipate, as Jos has said, that we'll realize net year-on-year benefits in 2022, which is a year earlier than originally planned. In summary, I think I said at the Capital Markets Day, the beginning of last year, Ultra has exciting potential. I think our excellent performance in 2020, particularly given the circumstances, is evidence that we are realizing that exciting potential and that One Ultra is already delivering. We enter 2021 with stable markets, good visibility from a growing pipeline of business, a record order book, and very strong order cover. We're well-positioned as an agile player in growth segments with the ability to outperform as we continue to connect our unique range of capabilities to provide better and relevant and expanded solutions to our customers' evolving challenges. We continue to increase investment both organically, and now that we've got a clear and proven strategy, we fixed a number of the basics and have a much improved capital discipline, we're also beginning to look at opportunities to accelerate strategy and enhance organic growth through partnerships and acquisitions where we see significant value creation opportunity from doing so. Our strong balance sheet and good cash generation is giving us plenty of capacity if the right thing should come along. We're also accelerating the transformation of the business and anticipate realizing benefits on it much earlier than originally anticipated. I think when you stand back and look at all this, I think you'll understand why we are increasingly confident of Ultra's ability to continue to deliver sustainable value for all stakeholders over the long term and for so much more to come from Ultra in the future. So that's the end of the formal presentation. I now like to hand back to Tamsin, who will facilitate the Q&A session that now follows.
And we have a question from David Barker from Bank of America, who asks, in 2021, do you expect to make an acquisition in line with your leverage targets, or do you expect to return capital to shareholders this year?
I think we don't ever expect to make an acquisition. We look at all acquisitions on the basis of, do they enhance our strategy execution and do they create value for shareholders? I think we have fixed, as I said, a number of the basics. I think we have a much more capable team, and I think we have a much clearer strategy, which means we're more confident at looking at potential partnerships and acquisitions going into 2021, and we'll continue to do that. I think if we continue to generate cash at the rate we do, at some stage in the future, if we can't deploy it in a value-creative way in support of shareholders, we'll have to think about what to do with it. We see plenty of opportunity for both organic and potentially inorganic investment for now, such that short-term inefficiencies in the balance sheet we don't anticipate will last very long.
Thank you. And David has a second question. Do you think Ultra is the right owner for the civil aerospace business when you're focusing on growing defence end markets?
It's an interesting question. We've spent quite a lot of time looking at the strategy of that business this year. We regard it actually as a very interesting controls business that also has some interesting software capability. It has historically focused on both military and commercial aerospace, but we see what it does in the areas of high power, small size controllers as applicable to some interesting growth areas. For example, unmanned vehicles, both on land and sea and air. So it's going through a bit of a strategic review, but I think our current hypothesis is that it has interesting capabilities that are not specific to aerospace and can be used more broadly, including in our core defence businesses.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. At the end of the day, we don't have a commercial aerospace business. We have a market that is commercial aerospace for the capabilities and solutions that we provide. So I don't think it's as much about should we own or should we not own commercial aerospace. We're always going to, I suspect, deliver products and solutions into the commercial aerospace market because that is just one of the outlets for what we do.
Thank you. And we'll go to Richard Page from Numis.
Morning, all. A couple of questions, if I may, please. First of all, on the transformation costs, obviously you flagged an increase in 21 in terms of those costs. Could you give us a bit more colour on terms of the shape beyond 21 in terms of costs and benefits from those, please? And a second question, I think at the beginning of the presentation you mentioned the NICSE contract potential value of up to $270 million, but you also highlighted sort of 200 US ships and global opportunity beyond that as well. What is assumed within that potential value up to $270 million, please?
So, Joss, do you want to pick up transformation costs and profile beyond 2021?
Yeah, sure. So, actually, we see the OPEX costs carrying on pretty similar next year. We do have some projects that actually go live, actually, in the first half this year. However, we've got some more site rationalizations in mind for next year, and they're quite expensive. Then we see the cost tailing off sharply in 2023. And the current plan is the transformation actually ends at the end of 2023. And beyond that, all the projects will have stopped, but we will have built in parallel a sustainable continuous improvement culture that we believe will kind of carry on with a groundswell of improvement forever, but that won't involve any transformation costs beyond 2023.
And then on NICSE, Richard, as you've correctly spotted, the IDIQ is for the US Navy, so that is just for the 200 ships, but the market for this product is over double that. So I'd be very surprised if that if we were not marketing our next generation Nixie outside of the US in the not too distant future. So there is significant potential upside from the numbers that I've shared with you.
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
We'll go to Sandy Morris at Jefferies.
A couple of things, if I may. The first one is just on the site rationalizations, where we seem to be partly responding to the sale of Flightline, but partly rejigging our what would have been Ocean Systems operations in North America, you know, so closing down in North Carolina, which I think was 3 Phoenix, and then coming out of Rochester, which actually only a couple of years ago was a site we were investing in and increasing. Is this at all tied to getting ready for the dissolution of a RAPSCO, or is it simply tied now to things like the Canadian frigate program?
The site rationalization is nothing to do with the RAPSCO. I think, as you and I have talked about, certainly when I arrived at this organization, we had 50-something active operational sites and 80 sites in total for an organization of 4,500 people and turning over 800 million. I think that is too much footprint. It creates inefficiencies. It creates environmental footprint. It creates problems with more collaborative working, yada, yada, yada. But we're not on a program of randomly cutting site sizes. I think maybe in the past, this organization has tended to bang things together based on capacity and geographical footprint. We are looking at reorganizing our footprint to minimize it, but at the same time, put the right people and the right capabilities together in the right place. The Rochester, New York site, which is indeed the site that we're in the process of closing, that was only slated as something where we were putting our US Global Business Services Center in. We're still going to have Global Businesses Service Center based up in Rochester, just in a much smaller footprint and a much more appropriate facility. And we'll continue to keep an eye on sites. On the flip side of it, we are investing to improve the quality of our sites, and also we're investing where we're growing. And there'll be a significant investment in two of our Canadian facilities in 2021 to deal with the capacity increase and the capability improvement that those sites need to demonstrate.
I mean, I'm just curious because, as you mentioned, the Canadian program, how much of that is in the backlog, if any?
Very little, Sandy, because the unlike the way the US sometimes orders placing IDIQs, which it then calls orders off on, CSC is a general award and then small and incremental development and production awards are going to be made over the coming years. So we've had the first couple of those, but the real potential for the Canadian Surface Combatant program for us is not in the order book.
And then jumping on to forensic technologies, I can see that this 85 million framework contract from the ATF is a little bit larger than the legacy 5-year framework contracts we had. But this mix of sales issue, is a shift to software away from hardware, good or bad, sorry, for forensic technologies?
I think it's part of forensic technologies trying to provide the right service to its customer in the right structure, in the right way. I mean, I think net-net, it's a very positive development for forensics. It's also a very positive development for customers. It very much expands the potential customer base they can draw on because that customer is no longer having to front up a big capital spend on day one. So for us, it's a good evolution of the forensics business model and an exciting further angle for the continued growth of that business.
Just to make sure I absolutely get it, this is enabling other customers to access the hardware and get the results? Or, sorry, how does it work that you could, if you were Uganda or whoever signed up, you can do this without actually also having some hardware locally?
Well, I think what it does, Sandy, is it, rather than having to pay, say, $500,000 for a box that will do your ballistics analysis for you, we'll put the box in your location for you, and then you'll pay us a service fee, either based on the number of times you want to check the ballistics on a particular cartridge or shell, or an annual service fee. It's just providing a slightly more capital intensive but beneficial way of giving those services to customers in a way that they value and can afford.
Yeah, I mean, it's just intriguing, because to get the order book up 35% without a big slug of hardware is quite a move, isn't it?
Well, I think the order book is strong, and there's going to be a lot of hardware shipped to satisfy it.
About two-thirds of it is actually support and maintenance anyway, already. So it's a very sticky business. One reason we like it, it's just got good repeatable revenue.
Okay. Well, I'll quit there, but just observe that it's jolly good to see those contingent liabilities in Oman and about tax disappearing as well. So that's cleaned the accounts up even more. So well done.
Sandy,
thank you.
Sandy, you're perhaps one of the analysts that's read all the way through the notes, but it is notable that our 20 million or so contingent liability that we had for state aid tax, that's been resolved now. So that's gone away.
And we'll go to Henry Carver from Peel Hunt.
Thanks. Yeah, morning, guys. Just a couple ones from me. First of all, clearly, you know, the market backdrop seems pretty healthy, particularly on the military side. Just wondered if you're seeing any change among the competitive landscape there. I mean, obviously, M&A is a theme that's cropping up all over the place, but just wondered if you had any sort of comments around the competitive landscape. And then secondly, you touched on ESG, and I think, you know, all of E, S and G in turn. But I just wondered if, you know, clearly you're making moves to improve all of those things. Have you set any targets that you're responding to in terms of the site consolidation, or is the environmental footprint a kind of happy coincidence alongside your site rationalisation? Just any thoughts around that would be great. Thanks.
Thanks, Henry. I mean, on the competitive landscape, just organically, it's competitive. Ultra's got a relatively unique suite of capabilities and technologies that suit the changing focus of the Five Eyes defence customers. So I think we're in a good place. I think a lot of the procurers, the defence procurers, are looking at more efficient ways of procuring, and they're looking at people that are perhaps more capable of supplying subsystems than they might otherwise have been. So I think the competitive environment is what it is. There's always competition, but in knitting Ultra together for the first time, we're finding we're much more competitive in areas than perhaps we would have been as operating as single site businesses. On M&A, look, I think we're signalling that after a couple of years where the A side of M&A has absolutely been off the table, whilst we've been clarifying strategy and fixing some of the basics, we're now signalling, I think, more confidence in looking at the right acquisitions, and we'll pay what we think they're worth to us based on our strategy and the value creation that we can create through owning the asset. And if that's more than other people see, we'll end up buying it. And if we won't, we won't. So I don't think you'll see us chasing acquisitions. I think you'll see us very disciplined in what is a competitive M&A environment today. But we think that there are plenty of assets out there which we can create more value through owning than can be developed by others. So we'll see how that plays out. On ESG, I think ESG for me is it's this interesting trend that has almost appeared independent of what we're already doing around all aspects of society, sustainability, and governance. We've set ourselves, as I think we told you at the Capital Markets Day, a very clear set of objectives for us to deliver in 2024 against each of our stakeholder groups. And every year, we set a new set of annual targets that are a progression from where we were to that desired end state. And we're making good progress on all of those. And we remain very committed to our 2024. Call them ESG if you want, but we don't. We call them our broader stakeholder goals. Specifically as it relates to site utilisation, I don't think you've shared it with anybody externally. We do have very much a target in mind that we have published internally of what we are trying to reduce our footprint to and how more efficient we need to be in the utilisation of our floor space. But I don't think it's our intent to share that externally, but we'll tell you when we've done it.
Brilliant. That's very clear. Thanks, guys.
And we'll go to Rory Smith at Investec.
Super. Thank you. Just picking up on Henry's question, maybe could you be able to give us a bit more colour on the competitive landscape in Sonobuoys specifically and how, you know, particularly Lockheed Martin are progressing in the medium term there, and if you see that changing at all with the change in JV partner, any sort of extra colour there would be appreciated. And then perhaps related to that, if you were looking to pursue inorganic growth this year, what, you know, specific capabilities would you most likely be looking at there? Thank you.
Thanks, Rory. On Sonobuoys, you know, as you know, Sonobuoys is an important part of our business, but an increasingly small part of our business as we grow the rest of our operations. We've got a very good working relationship and a very effective joint venture in Arapsco. It does look like our partner in Arapsco will likely change at some stage during the course of this year, probably to Elbit. But that requires, they've got to go through a bunch of hurdles and approvals to do that. But we look forward to working with Elbit, an organisation we know well and are very happy to partner with. But clearly that means that there are now sort of three players in the Sonobuoys space once the joint venture unwinds. And it's our job to make sure that we end up continuing to support and gain more than our fair share of that Sonobuoys market going forward. Things like the development award on EFAR DIFAR are examples of why we continue to believe that we will be a very positive player in the Sonobuoys space for many years to come. And our objective is, of course, to gain more than our fair share of that market, of which we have 50%-ish today.
I think in terms of markets, we'll be most interested in our defence businesses, but I wouldn't totally rule out forensics. There is an adjacency there, potential. And in terms of capabilities, I think we are particularly interested in building our capability across algorithms, sensors, which would include sonar, software, particularly command and control, advanced radio frequencies, extreme statistical models, and quantum-resistant cryptography. They would be our kind of core areas already, and they'd be the areas we'd be seeking to build on going forward.
And I think more broadly, Rory, you know, we are a major maritime subsystems player, both above and below water, and we're a multi-domain intelligence and comms solutions provider. And I think if it fits into those broad categories and touches on some of the specific capabilities that Joss has alluded to, we'll be definite lookers. But actually, whether we do or don't play, it'll all come down to whether we can create value from owning the asset and whether we can do more with it than others can do. And that'll be the main determinant of whether or not we do make acquisitions to enhance our already exciting strategy.
Very clear. Thank you.
And we'll go to Nick Cunningham at Agency Partners.
Thank you very much. Yes, looking at the impact that you suffered from COVID in the year, and obviously relatively limited compared to a lot of other people, but looking forward, take your point on a protracted, slow civil recovery, but to the extent that you've had your supply chains disrupted and such like in 20, what do you think, any sort of rough quantum, if you like, of what the potential bounce back might be in 21 or even into 22? And then offsetting that, there's a mention in your statements about potentially incurring a bit more cost in 21 as T&E starts to come back up again. How does that look like it might net off if you like, one of the deltas in 21 on 20? And then second point, looking further forward, if we look at the backlog, including the unbooked, you know, the IDIQs, CSC and other similar longer term contracts where you've only got a small amount of it in the book, what do you think your visibility is like now that you've actually won so many big, similar, large contracts over the last 2 years?
I mean, we talked at the mid-year actually about the tailwind we were seeing from travel and marketing. I think on a full year basis, it was around £6 million of savings versus what we were expecting for last year. For this year, we're actually expecting that to come back a bit to £3 million kind of year-on-year headwinds as marketing increases and travel increases. Although it has to be said that at the moment, COVID sort of is carrying on much the same as last year, but we're planning for a bounce back of about £3 million. On supply chain disruption, it's an interesting point. My view is this year, we're seeing pretty well what we saw last year. In fact, January was perhaps a bit worse, but I'd say it's now normalised back to roughly the run rate from last year. So I'm not really expecting any benefits to start coming through, either from customers sort of speeding up. We are seeing some customer delays. We're still seeing difficulty accessing customers. And actually, we do have a business that relies on accessing US Navy bases, and we still can't access those US Navy bases. And supply chain, we're still seeing disruption in our supply chain in a number of businesses. So I don't think we're going to see much improvement this year. There's one reason why we're guiding for the margins to be a little over 14%. Next year, obviously, we hope that the customers sort of revert to normality and also our supply chains revert to normality. That's one reason why, you know, that together with transformation benefits coming through, why we're guiding for good margins next year.
Yeah, I think, Nick, intuitively and without a huge amount of science, the tailwinds and the headwinds broadly net off. But I do think it's important to Joss's point, you know, the COVID driven disruption is not over. And in fact, we found January more challenging than I think all bar 1 month last year in terms of the number of people that were self-isolating and all that sort of stuff. So I think this has to play out, and it'll play out over the next 6 months. But, you know, I think probably the tailwinds and the headwinds net each other out. In terms of visibility and order backlog, you're absolutely right. You know, we only report in our order book formal orders placed on us. A lot of those orders are placed both on IDIQs or indeed on platforms where we're positioned for the long term. And yet again, in 2020, we saw a significant improvement in those, what we call the pipeline, i.e. programs we're on, but where we have not received formal orders. And I think, you know, that is a very significant number, sort of 3 times annual revenue or something like that, and probably more. So when we refer to our building book of business, that is one of the reasons we're continuing to demonstrate and to express such confidence in the ability of this business to grow and outperform.
Thank you. That's very helpful on both.
We have a question from Charlotte Keyworth from Barclays, who asks, you guided to 11 million to 13 million of cost for transformation in 2021, an incremental 5 million year on year. Does this represent peak in terms of cost and activity on the programme? And how should we think about both beyond this year?
Yes, it's the peak, although we expect next year to be pretty similar, but not higher. And then we expect it to drop pretty sharply in 2023 and then fall back to zero, or very close to zero, in 2024.
And Ross Law from Berenberg asks, programme execution. You mentioned there's more to do here. Are there any large programmes integral to your growth outlook affected by substandard execution currently?
So I think when Jos referred to continuing opportunities to improve our programme execution, I don't think he was referring to great big black holes knocking around, Ross. I think we are a long-term contracting business, or a good proportion of what we do is long-term contracting. Clearly, in determining the outcome of those long-term contracts, you're always making estimates of what it's going to take you to complete that contract. And those estimates are all to do with risks as they drop away and the cost to complete. We'll always have programs that are probably unlikely to meet the estimates that were put in place at the time you bid. We also have a vast number of programs that will exceed the estimated costs to complete at the time they were bid. So I think there is always opportunities to improve our execution in programmes, but I don't think it's an endemic issue. We've worked hard over the last couple of years on improving it, but we will always have problem programmes and we will always have exceptionally successful programmes. So I don't think it's a particularly high risk here 2 years in, but it's something that we'll always be managing.
Many thanks. Simon, do you have any closing remarks?
I'd just like, if there are any other questions, you know where we are, and you can get hold of us through Gabby on the website or directly to me and Jos. But I'd just like to thank you for attending this morning. 2020, I think, was a really good year for Ultra. It was delivered in difficult circumstances and is evidence of the exciting potential of this group. And there really is much more to come from what I believe to be an increasingly great team. And we're very confident going into. Thanks very much, and we'll catch up with you later.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.